you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member, you'll know a thing or two about an expertly packed capsule wardrobe that balances business and leisure. So you can go from conference sleek to cocktail party chic with a few new accessories. You can hustle from 9 to 5 before exploring with ease from 5 to 9. Because you're the chief excursion officer. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/business.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Intelligence greater than the mind. In this podcast, Eckhart talks with a live audience in Greece. He kicks off the session discussing the spiritual wisdom of ancient Greek philosophers. He says, among the most renowned was Socrates, who humbly said, I am the only one who knows that he knows nothing. Eckhart believes Socrates was saying he was comfortable with the state of not knowing and the pure awareness connected to deep insight. Eckhart explains why he believes we all have access to this vast intelligence, which is greater than the mind. He says we find it when we practice presence.
One of the things you become comfortable with or learn here, perhaps, is a transcending a mind pattern that is could be described as always waiting for the next thing. Most people are not aware of it because it's always there, and something that's always there you're not really aware of. When I'm not speaking right now, when this pauses, I'm not asking myself what I'm going to say next. It would be stressful. Would be even more stressful if before a session I was thinking, what am I going to talk about? In other words, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. Since nothing is planned, we have to see what the present moment comes up with, what comes out of it. I don't know if you've seen, I haven't yet spoken much about the ancient Greek philosophers, fascinating. I may or may not talk about them at some point. There's a book, it's called Lost Masters, and it's written by Linda Johnson, and the foreword is by Eckhart Tolle. And it's about the hitherto neglected spiritual dimension in the teachings of the ancient Greek philosophers. Wonderful read, although you shouldn't read too much while you're here. But if you have to read, that's not a bad book to read. And so it starts with probably the pre-Socratics who lived around 500 BC at the time of the Buddha, people such as Heraclitus and Parmenides and Pythagoras. Fantastic. Pythagoras, amazing philosopher. That was the beginning, and then there's a span of about 750 years of Greek philosophy, and it ends in approximately the year 250 AD. In the year 250, so 750 years later approximately, the last philosopher is Plotinus, which in other languages may be called Plotino, etc., etc. Plotinus, a very profound philosopher. Amazing insights into spirituality. Not an easy read, though. So, and this is the book that I wrote the foreword. Now, one thing that I mentioned in the foreword was a comment on a very famous statement by Socrates. And Socrates, when he was asked, why do people call you the wisest of all men? Or maybe it's not, it could have been, why does the oracle at Delphi call you the wisest of all men? And then people started to call him the wisest of all men. Why do they call you that? And of course his famous answer was, because I'm the only one who knows that he knows nothing. And this answer has not really been understood, as I see it, in its depths. It's usually interpreted as feigned modesty. He's saying he knows nothing, but he knows very well that he knows a lot. He's just pretending that he has no ego. But it wasn't like that, and I mention it in the foreword. Knowing that he knows nothing, this is reported by Plato, because Socrates never wrote anything, so everything we know about Socrates was written by his disciple Plato. And when I saw that for the first time, I realized the actual meaning of it, which Plato didn't recognize because he was not quite as profound as Socrates, although he had great insights too.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Socrates was comfortable with the state of not knowing. He did not teach from accumulated knowledge. And that's a very vital thing. I mentioned that in the foreword and talked about it. And the author, Linda Johnson, then told me, oh, amazing, I never thought of that. And it's not easy to recognize. Now, what does that mean? As you probably know, Socrates taught through dialogues with people. So people come to him with a question, and then he asks them another question, and then they answer, and then he asks another question. And gradually the dialogue develops, and as the dialogue develops, gradually his insights become deeper, and he shows that the questioner is actually misperceiving many things. He says, has certain assumptions which are not true, and gradually this emerges. And it is clear to me that the power, the creative power that came through him, came because he was comfortable with the state of not knowing, which means it is the state of pure awareness, cessation of thinking, and that from the point of view of the conceptual mind looks like a state of complete ignorance. Because obviously the conceptual mind says when you're not thinking, you don't know anything. So, and in a way it is, but by entering that state, you begin to have access to a deeper source of knowledge or knowing that is within you, an intelligence that is greater than the intelligence of the mind and greater than anything that could be measured in IQ tests. So if you can access the state of not knowing, which is become comfortable with not knowing, then your mind becomes more creative because the creative impulse comes from this, the depth of the awareness, the deep I, as I sometimes call it, as opposed to the surface I, the personality, with its accumulated knowledge and its conditioning. And so Socrates was able to just sit there and be in spacious awareness, which is not knowing and knowing that he's not knowing, which is different again from a fool who might sit there and not know a thing, but he doesn't know that he doesn't know anything. And this is why often a wise person has been mistaken for a fool, because they both are in that state, but a very different state of not knowing. One is below thought, the other one is above thought. You do not need to continuously find a position, a mental position, towards what's going on around you at every given moment. So if you can be as much as possible in that state of clarity, in which there is no movement of thought but just an aware presence, then you become a very powerful creative force in any situation. It could be a meeting, it could be a committee meeting, it could be all kinds of things where people are discussing something, need to arrive at some kind of conclusion or decision. And if you can be there and embody this clarity of presence, where you're not continuously engaged in immediately formulating conceptualizations, but to have that space of just you take in what's there, you listen. To be able to listen to another human being, extremely important, but how do you really listen to another? You cannot listen when you yourself are already preparing the next thing that you're going to say. You're not really listening, you're not giving attention. This is particularly important not only in a work situation, it's particularly important with your children, for example, to be able to give them attention, which really is more than listening to what somebody is saying. It is listening. In this attention, you sense beyond the personality of this person and beyond whatever this person is saying. So there's a sensing of the essence of this person also. But you can only do it because you're aware of your own essence. And then you develop the ability to step back from thinking periodically or perhaps frequently, and then speak or think, then step back from thinking. So your consciousness, your ordinary consciousness, is no longer a continuous stream of thinking. It is thinking that is interspersed with spaciousness. And that's not that difficult to practice, but of course, yes, it is true that the momentum behind thinking is enormous. It has a pull, a gravitational pull, and especially if your entire sense of identity is bound up with thinking, the narrative of yourself, and you need to keep it alive. So it's a lovely practice. You can do it first in non-challenging situations, simple conversation, really give attention to somebody. And this attention, which we call listening, is more than just auditory perception. It is an energy field of presence. And that changes the nature of the interaction with the other human. You're no longer just interacting on the human level. In addition to the human level, where you talk whatever it is you're talking about. There's the being level, the presence. Then you have the two dimensions. And humans, most humans, maybe not all, if they're totally immersed in their mind, they may not notice anything. But many humans will notice something that, about you, that, but they may not be able, probably won't be able to interpret what it is, or they can feel, perhaps, that it is, they like to be around you or in your presence because they feel kind of recognized in their being, acknowledged. Particularly important with children, since most people these days are completely mind-absorbed, most children suffer from a lack of acknowledgement of their being. The attention that is given to children by most parents is purely mental and emotional, so mental, emotional. They do whatever they can, but most of the interaction, in if you look into normal family environment, most of the interaction is to do with getting something done or stopping to do something. Do that, don't do that. Have you done that? What's the next thing that we're going to do? There's always this momentum. Do that. And what are you doing now? What's this one? Okay, this. There's never a stopping and acknowledging the other person's being, the child's being. So many children have a sense of something missing. They don't know what it is. It's an obscure underlying sense of unease. And that sense of unease, I'm talking about parents who are not present at all with their children, which unfortunately is still the majority of parents these days. There is a sense, an underlying sense of unease, and that surfaces then often when a child, especially when they reach puberty, become teenagers. Many teenagers are very unhappy, and even many children these days are not happy, they are unhappy. The prescription medications that are given to children to affect their mental, emotional state is just amazing. So children are restless, uneasy. It doesn't help that they're involved a lot with these devices. It takes them out of themselves. But you as a parent, your main task, in addition to the practical things that you need to do to look after the child, have you brushed your teeth? Yeah, that's an important question. But it's more important to give the child attention. And then you can start with listening. What did you do today? How are you feeling? And then listen. But listening is more than listening. There's an outflow. It's an energy field that arises, and that can touch the other human being at the deepest level. And then gradually, the other can become aware of that dimension, the child in this case, can become aware of that dimension within themselves a little bit, because they are being acknowledged in the depths of their being. Their being is being acknowledged. You're not just operating on the human level, although the human is, of course, necessary. Perfectly fine, but it's not enough. In any relationship or any interaction, the purely human level is not enough for a satisfying relationship. If the spaciousness, which is one way of putting it, if the spaciousness is not there in the relationship, the spaciousness is missing. If there's no space in the relationship frequently manifests conflict and friction and dissatisfaction and frustration. Because on the human level, every human being that you spend time with or live with will exhibit certain characteristics or idiosyncrasies that you find annoying and upsetting after a while. No matter who you meet and live with, you will find that, oh dear, now he's doing that again. Why can't he do that? Why is she always saying, don't get it, what's that weird way of, why is he eating like that? And so it's sometimes you come to an arrangement and find you somehow manage to live together, but there's not the spaciousness isn't there. You have to do it. It has to start with you, and even if the other is not spacious at all, maybe doesn't get it, sometimes it the other, it jumps across and the other one also gets it. But it, maybe you're the only one in the relationship who is able to be spacious, and the other one might be totally unspacious with a very cluttered mind. And there you are. And he or she is.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Price drop? Time to shop. Get to a Nordstrom Rack store today for first dibs on new markdowns. Now score even more, up to 70% off brands everyone loves at Nordstrom Rack. Denim, dresses, sneakers, tops, and more. Plus, get genius deals on jackets, sweaters, and boots for the whole family. Shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and save up to 70% with new markdowns. But hurry, deals this great won't last.
What to do then? This is a question that is frequently asked. Of course, I never tell people what to do. They have to realize for themselves what to do. Again, let's just come back briefly to the state of not knowing includes, in that moment, not knowing who or what you are. Having no, obviously, when you come, there's a moment of cessation of thinking and just aware presence. In that moment, you have no opinion about yourself. How could you? Because an opinion is a thought. You have no opinion about who you are. That's a very liberating thing. If you can begin to live like that and see how unimportant the opinions are that you hold about yourself or others, that's an enormous liberation. And it's an enormous freedom to have no, it sounds a little weird to some people at first. How can you have no opinion? Do I have an opinion about myself? Let's see. There's the human level. There's the human level, of course, is there, and there's the transcendent dimension that comes through the human dimension, and kind of, yes, that's an interesting question, what happens to the human dimension? I'll come back to myself in a second if you're interested. What happens to the human dimension as the unconditioned consciousness emerges more fully in you? How does it affect the conditioned entity of yourself, the egoic self? How does it affect? Does it completely change it into something absolutely wonderful? Or does it totally remain the same as it's always been? Well, either of these statements are not correct. It does not transform the human into some perfect human being. There's no such thing. And even if you started living with the Buddha, you would get annoyed about certain things after a while and realize that the Buddha also has certain characteristics as a human that are just limited in one way, because as a human you must have certain limitations. You can't be everything. You're good at this but bad at that. However, a change does happen to the conditioned entity. You are no longer in the grip of your conditioning, so that it determines what you do in this world. It determines what you think and how you act and react in this world. You are no longer at the mercy of your conditioning. That is true. Certain aspects of your conditioning remain. They are still there. But you do not confuse them with who you are. You're not identified. And the very dysfunctional ways of conditioning, those that create suffering for yourself and others, gradually they erode. Other forms of conditioning may remain, including things where people would say, "You are awakened, how can you still do that?" Because your ideas about how an awakened human behaves may not be correct. There was an Indian man, a very great spiritual teacher, who before he awakened was a chain smoker, and after he awakened was still a chain smoker. And somebody recorded his talks and did a very good editing job, and out of that emerged one of the great spiritual books in the world. It's called I Am That, by the Indian spiritual teacher Nisargadatta Maharaj. You can forget the Maharaj, which is a title, which means the great king. Nisargadatta, not easy to remember, but I Am That, you can remember that. And that's a wonderful read. That takes you into a presence. Every chapter takes you into a presence. One of my favorite books. Anyway, he was a chain smoker before awakening and continued to be a chain smoker after. It didn't matter to him anymore, and finally died of throat cancer. He didn't mind. Certain idiosyncrasies remain, but those that make your life and other people's lives difficult and unpleasant tend to get eroded and dissolve. And you are no longer in the grip of your conditioning, so you can respond to situations and to people from the depths of awareness as the deep eye, rather than the conditioning of your mind. You're not at the mercy of your conditioning anymore. And you're not identified with it. People sometimes say, don't you need an ego to function in this world? Surely you need an ego. How can you be egoless in this world and function? This is a way of semantics. The way I use the word ego, when I use ego, what it means is complete identification with your form identity, the body and the mind. So that's ego. Then you are the, as I used the analogy that I used before, you are the actor who has learned his script, his role, the script so well that he is acting it out, no longer knowing anything else except the script that dominates and his mind and mental emotional field. So that's that the ego is complete identification, complete lack of awareness. So identification with the mental emotional entity. And then, however, form identity remains. So you remain a human with its idiosyncrasies, some of which don't go away, and others do. So I still haven't answered the question, do I have an opinion about who I am? I have to look into it carefully because I need to give a truthful answer. Well, I don't have a conceptual identity, and because that would be a burden and it would become an obstacle. So I'm described perhaps as a spiritual teacher, and I am a spiritual teacher right at this moment when I'm kind of teaching. The question is, am I still a spiritual teacher when I walk away from here towards my room, or when I'm back home, or when I'm going to a supermarket to buy something? Do I carry the identity with me as the great spiritual teacher is now going to the supermarket? I don't. I'm let go of that identity, so I don't. There's no, unfortunately, there's no sense of deep, yes, it is satisfying to know that the teaching is reaching so many people, but I don't get that sense that I am doing it. I am changing people's lives, because what does that mean? I am, who is this I? If this I means the deep I, the consciousness, then that is true. But the deep I is your deep I too. It is the universal. This is the deep I of the universe. And so the human is the vehicle for the expression of that. And that's fine. I like that. I like to be a vehicle for the expression of the deep I. And in a sense, a lot of the time, especially in the teaching situation, I am the deep I talking, and then you may find the same, you may notice certain variations on a daily basis. Sometimes there's a bit more of your personality operating, you are the surface I, and then there's the deep I. You might experience certain degrees of intensity.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Eckhart Tolle, Essential Teachings, the podcast. You can follow these essential teachings on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't yet, go to Spotify and follow this podcast. Join us next week for more enlightened teachings from Eckhart Tolle. Thank you for listening.
We've all got old stuff that we should toss, but an old 401k, make sure it keeps working for you. A Fidelity rollover IRA has no account fees or minimums to open. An easy-to-follow rollover process makes it simple to get started in under 15 minutes. Plus, you'll have access to a rollover specialist. Whether you've switched jobs or are just organizing your finances, learn more at fidelity.com/rollover. Consider all your options and the applicable fees and features of each before moving your retirement assets. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?